in this chapter, and as it turns out, that's the end of Brahma's prayers. And after Brahma's prayers, Maitreya starts speaking, how the Lord received his prayers. The children are a little restless. Too much soccer or something. So this is text 24 and text 25. The themes are continuing. The theme of these three things: Brahma seeking empowerment to do his service, Brahma seeking protection from false ego and the sense of doership. The other component isn't expressed in these two verses, and that is the empowerment to be able to bring to the conditioned souls that are going to be within that region that he has created or will be creating the remedy of their sufferings. But compassion and humility certainly are very strong components of his message to the Lord. Text 24. The Lord's potencies are innumerable. As he lies down in the water of devastation, I am born as the total universal energy from the navel lake in which the lotus sprouts. I am now engaged in manifesting his diverse energies in the form of the cosmic manifestation. I therefore pray that in the course of my material activities, I may not be deviated from the vibration of the Vedic hymns. Children have a funny way of being children. It's like they're very consistent. Okay. A couple of things here that I want to highlight. One of them is the emphasis that Prabhupada makes in the purport, which is the duties that we do in this world, because we're in this world, they have a material dimension to them. And because there's a material dimension to them, there's a tendency to become influenced by the material energy when we're doing activities in this world. Even its devotional service. And so there needs to be some protection from that material contact or the material influence. And we need to turn to the Lord, he who is not in contact with the material energy, nor is he influenced by the material energy. Rather the opposite. He influences it. It's his energy and he directs it, and by taking shelter of him and seeking his protection, consciously seeking his protection, we're awarded protection. The very nature just to say it again, the very nature of devotional service in this realm is there's material, there's going to be, unavoidably, there's going to be material contact because we're in this atmosphere. So devotional service inherently is of the internal potency. There's protection, but then there needs to be a conscious awareness of while we're in this atmosphere, we need the Lord's protection as part of the component of the being eligible for the internal potency. Is we're feeling a sense of dependency for the Lord's protection. There are say the same thing in a different way. In nectar devotion, it's mentioned the six symptoms of surrender. That's taken from Padma Purana, where there are six symptoms of surrender. Does anybody know what those six symptoms of surrender are? Okay, slower. Anukulyasya, sankalpa, those are the first two. Pratikulyasya, varjanam. That's surrender is symptomized by accepting those things that are favorable for devotional service and rejecting those things that are unfavorable for devotional service. It's kind of like a no-brainer, right? But sometimes we accept things favorable and don't accept things, and continue to accept things that are unfavorable. But it's both. Then, two more. And what is it in English? Rakshasya titi vishvaso. Krishna is my protector. Goptritve varanam tava. Krishna is my maintainer. Then? Yeah. Full self-surrender, dedication of body, mind, and words unto the Supreme. And the final? Humility. When Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes his Sharanagati songs, it's in song form teaching the six principles of surrender. And he starts with the last one first. That's humility. And then he follows humility with full self-surrender and then the other four. But the Lord is my protector. There are four animal propensities. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Of the four animal propensities, which is the strongest? Defending. Because when there's some sense of danger, then we go into the mode of defending. But for a devotee, this is Brahma, he has a sense of danger. That is, and perhaps, we also have a sense of danger that we're in a material atmosphere. It's dangerous. You're going into the material world to do your occupational duty. You're associating with mundane people, some of them vicious. Dangerous. Sense of protection is needed. Where do you turn to? A devotee turns to Krishna in that sense of being protected. Krishna is our protector. And taking shelter, surrender to Krishna is our medium of protection. One time Prabhupada was asked, just like this is a good time to say this, when there's a change of season, there's commonly flus and colds go around. Children seem to be especially susceptible to colds and flus when there's change of season. Some other people are also. So one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada, when there's a flu or some disease that's circulating, one person contracts the disease, another person doesn't contract the disease. Is that karma, Srila Prabhupada? And Prabhupada's answer was, if your resistance is high, you won't contract the disease. If your resistance is low, you'll contract the disease. Didn't say anything about karma. I was just hearing a lecture. I heard it twice. Prabhupada is in Mauritius. And he's speaking. It's a question-answer session, and someone's being confrontational. How do you know? Are you sure? And Prabhupada's reply was, how do you know? Are you sure? Because I'm speaking from authority, I'm sure. If it was just me speaking, I couldn't say I was sure. But I'm speaking from authority, and therefore it's sure. And what is your authority from which you're speaking? Anyway, so in the course of that discussion, Prabhupada was explaining that in the morning, he was in Mauritius, in the morning, a medical practitioner came and gave him inoculation for yellow fever, because apparently there was yellow fever passing around Mauritius at the time. So by the inoculation, then resistance is improved. So resistance, you don't contract the disease. So what's our resistance to being in the material atmosphere? That's Brahma's concern. He's in the material atmosphere. He's going to create big time. He has to contact all types, the purport is described, all types of living entities, some of them very vicious. All the grades of living entities. It's his program to create them. So he's going to have a lot of unwholesome contact. He wants protection. So that protection is by surrender, but it's also part of that surrender is particular prayers. Just like that example I told you of Prabhupada saying, I can't fall down. He's always praying for protection. My dear Lord, please protect me. And the protection is to not forget Krishna. Like Prahlad Maharaj, he was protected in very severe circumstances because, and his perfection was Vishnu Smaranam. Of the nine processes, Prahlad is the example of achieving spiritual perfection through remembrance of the Lord, constant remembrance of the Lord. He was protected from, you know, unhuman circumstances. He was protected. So Brahma, he has much more material involvement than we have. We have some, but the extent, he's got the whole A to Z. The whole thing, the whole material creation, is he's got to put it together or arrange for someone to put it together by his empowerment. So he's concerned. And we don't have the same involvement. We have less capacity also. We should be concerned. And that, so it's the system of staying in that mood of taking shelter of the personality of Godhead, and part of that taking shelter of is prayers for shelter and prayers for protection. Here's the first line of the purport. Every person engaged in the loving, transcendental loving service of the Lord in this material world is prone to so many material activities. And if one is not strong enough to protect himself against the onslaught of material affection, he may be diverted from the spiritual energy. He uses this phrase twice, material affection. So one sense, material affection means being affected by. But we're affected by if we have affection for, meaning we want to be the enjoyer of, that kind of affection. And then we're vulnerable. And the protection from that is to have affection for Krishna. And by that, we can recognize the material world. This is Isavasyam, that God-centered. He's the proprietor. So how you can have affection for the property of someone else? who you have affection for. the biblical phrase is, one should not covet another man's wife. Covet, like a desire to be the enjoyer of something that's not, you're not appropriate for you to be the enjoyer of. Covet the property of the Lord. Develop material affection. An antidote for material affection is to recognize what Brahma is recognizing. Everything comes from the Supreme Lord. He's the root of the tree. I'm part of the tree. He's the root of the tree. He's the source of this. It's His. Proprietorship. It's like, go down that path a little bit. Prabhupada writes that Ishopanishad is about proprietorship. The theme of it is proprietorship. And it starts with the invocation. Om Purnamadak Purnamidam. Everything emanates from the Supreme. Complete. And then the first verse, recognizing everything comes from the Supreme Complete, we are being maintained by that Supreme Complete. We should accept those things that are meant for our maintenance and not other things, knowing well to whom they belong. That's Isavasya spirit. And one who does that, may they live for many, many years, peacefully, happily. And then, Andha tamahak pravashanti ye vidyam upasate. Those that don't, they have another destination. It's suffering now and downwards from there. Just from this one principle of recognizing the proprietor. Political ideologies are issues of over-proprietorship. You know, federal rights and state rights. The Civil War was over the issue of who's the controller. And who is the controller is, you know, the enjoyer. Who is the proprietor? They're the controller and enjoyer. So the recommendation that Prabhupada makes is very simple. We don't want this-ism, that-ism. We want Krishnaism or God-centeredness. Spiritual communism. And then you can have a dictator, a prime minister, you can have a king, you can have whatever. But it's the God-centeredness. He's the proprietor. Not the state, not the capitalist, not the individual. God's the proprietor. You live in that consciousness and that's good. You can have good government and happy citizens. If you don't have properly trained administrative heads and brahmanas that guide them accordingly, it's a condition of unhappiness. So back to Lord Brahma. He knows this. He has the cognition. He has the knowledge. And as he said in the previous verse, that which I have done before, I, as before, may be empowered. So it's a regular renewal. It's important in Krishna consciousness that we not only surrender to Krishna once and then take it easy. Coast. Or as Prabhupada would call it sometimes, rest on your laurels. You heard that phrase before? Rest on your laurels means you do something, you accomplish something, and then that's it. That accomplishment is your laurels, and based upon that, now you reach a plateau and you just coast for a while. So devotees in Krishna consciousness should not rest on their laurels. I surrender to Krishna. I remember in 1985, I surrendered to Krishna one day, and that's like it. Oh, and then I surrendered again in 1993, too, yeah. 2 days I surrendered to Krishna. It's an ongoing renewal of our surrender to Krishna, submission to Krishna, or rejoin the Hare Krishna movement kind of thing. Regularly. The act of submission is an ongoing act of submission to Krishna and to his disciplic succession representing him. An ongoing act of submission again and again. And that affords us protection. Admission into the internal potency and detachment from the external potency. The conditioning influences subside. And in that freed state or illumined state of Krishna consciousness, then we can see things in the proper perspective. We can act with proper guidance, take the things that we know and actually do them in devotion, because we're not so worried about, our attention is not taken away by stuff, all the turmoil of material existence. We're aware of those things, but our attention doesn't go away from the object of our attachment, Krishna. We're feeling protected. Then another thing that's in the verse, very different subject matter. Brahma is describing his specific activity. His specific activity is taking the vijnana shakti. Shakti means energy. And the energies of the universe is how Prabhupada has translated it. The total universal energy. Total universal energy. I was born as the total universal energy. It's first person singular. Brahma is saying that about himself. That sounds pretty egotistical. It also sounds wrong. But he's the firstborn living being, and within him there is this potential to manifest the whole cosmic manifest, the whole cosmic creation. But it's not, it's a potency invested within him. It's not him. It's a potency invested within him to create the whole thing. So from him the whole thing comes. So in one sense it's his, right? Because something that comes from you, it's yours. You're a carpenter by trade or profession. And you make a table or a chair or a piece of furniture. Now what happens in common sense? It belongs to me, so I take it, I put it in the marketplace and I sell it. Or I barter in exchange, I'll give you this chair for a bag of rice or whatever it is, the commodity of exchange. But it's mine because I created it. Now Brahma is, he is the born of the total universal energy. He's embodying that and he manifests it. He's understanding very clearly that total universal energy, vijnana shakti, it's his, it's not mine. And it's invested in me, but it's his. And I'm now using it in my service. And his service is manifesting his diverse energies. Or in the verse, it's ananta shakti. Vijnana shakti and ananta shakti. He's taking this, and going back previously, he described, within your form are all the universes, plural. I mean, kind of inconceivable. Something, how can we can't see the length and breadth of the universe. But he's able to see that within the Lord's form, not just this universe, which we can't see the length and breadth of, but innumerable universes, which we can't even see, what to speak of length and breadth of, they're all within him. And they're all within him even before they're created, because he's supposed to create one of them. But they're there in a subtle form. Subtle form. A avyakta murti. It's that avyakta murti, the subtle form. Krishna speaks about that in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Jagat asakti avyakta murti na. By me in my unmanifested form, this whole universe is pervaded. That's the language of the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So it's existing a priori. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur uses this very appropriate terminology, the prototype. Right? Prototype, like with patents, you give the patent office a prototype and they patent that, and then you can make one like it because it's been patented and no one else can do it. So the Lord has the patent for universes. And he gives a license to Brahma. You can make some. You can make one. But it's already existing in the body of the Lord. And then here's the ingredients, here's the plan, here's the patent. You have your license, go ahead. Make one. So he makes one. But the energies to make it, the plan to make it, everything, the intelligence to make it, the ability to make it, he's asking for the empowerment to put all that together and make one. But the energies are derived from the Vijnana Shakti, or the universal energies, and he's making manifest diverse energies of the Lord in the form of this universe, in the form of the cosmic manifestation. I am now engaged in manifesting his diverse energies in the form of the cosmic manifestation. I therefore pray that in the course of my material activities, in case some part of your day has some material activities, you can remember this one. I therefore pray that in the course of my material activities, I may not be deviated from the vibration of the Vedic hymns, from remembrance of you, through sound vibration, remembrance of you. We should be concerned to not be materially affected by the devotional service that we do in the world around us. Just being in this material atmosphere, it's contaminating. It's risky. One of the things that when training devotees to preach generally, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did this, Prabhupada did this, devotees would go in pairs for association, because when you're going out to conduct sankirtan or preaching work, you're taking a risk. You're dealing with the contaminating influences of material nature. Of course, you're taking a risk to not go out too. Just stick around and hang around with your mind and see what happens. It's also a risk. So going out is also a risk. And one should be mindful of the risk and take appropriate inoculation measures. Chant nice rounds before you go out and do your preaching work. And hear Srimad Bhagavatam's message carefully and offer your prayers and prepare yourself. Qualify yourself. An ordinary Brahmana may fall from the Brahma changes or the power of brahminical excellence due to his association with many fallen conditioned souls. Brahma, as the supermost Brahmana, is afraid of such fall down, and therefore he prays to the Lord for protection. Some devotees were visiting some of the holy places in India. One of the places they went to was Udupi, and while they were there, there was some of these sannyasis in the Udupi Maths. They had some exchanges with some of these senior devotees, and it got to the point of curiosity and intimacy that they were asking about Prabhupada is the founder of Acharya. How did that work? How did this happen? So they happened to have the video, You Were Ever Well Wisher, and they showed the video, and they had them go back to the place where Prabhupada is sitting in Golden Gate Park and chanting with all the hippies. And they said, this man is empowered. So we could not do that. Go sit in the midst of these wild people and not fall down. Even to cross the ocean, Madhvas are not to go across the ocean. Sometimes they do, but it's like that's a no-no if they do it, because it's risky. That injunction to not cross the ocean is don't leave the association of the holy dham, and you're at risk. But they saw what Prabhupada was doing, and they saw the fruit of what Prabhupada did, and that was their appreciation, is we could not do this. This is a uniquely empowered person. Because it takes empowerment to, according to Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, to induce others even to chant Krishna's name. Krishna Shakti Vina Nahi Tara Pravartana. So whatever it is that your service is, and certainly any portion of that that's for preaching, it requires empowerment. And with that empowerment, protection. And text 25. The Lord who is supreme and is the oldest of all is unlimitedly merciful. I wish that he may smilingly bestow his benediction upon me by opening his lotus eyes. He can uplift the entire cosmic creation and remove our dejection by kindly speaking his directions. And that's the end of his prayers. It's like poetically expressed, very, very beautifully done. It's a blank slate. He's not just, he's asking for instructions, but he's asking in such a nice way. May he who is this all-perfect person open his eyes and kindly speak some words that will purify our existence by his offering some instructions. Purport, Prabhupada writes, I'll just read two sentences. The Lord is ever increasingly merciful upon the fallen souls of this material world. Ever increasingly merciful upon the fallen souls of this material world. The whole cosmic manifestation is a chance for all to improve themselves in devotional service to the Lord. That's a very unique sentence, because generally Prabhupada would describe, and you'll get asked this question, so please pay attention to this part at least. Why does God create? And the people will point to all the bad things. There's all the suffering, and why does God create this place where there's suffering? You could say, well, he didn't do it, Brahma did it. But why? So commonly there's two reasons. Here's a third. House of detention, house of correction are the two. And the house of spiritual improvement is the third. So a house of detention is like a state, a government, whatever dimension, federal, state, or county, whatever, town, city, municipality, whatever it is, they have laws for the smooth, peaceful, nice functioning of their community, their constituency. But there always be lawbreakers. So when they have laws, there has to be law enforcement. And when they enforce the law, they could, like, you know, there could be one penalty. You're dead. Put you out of existence. But if it's not you're dead, put you out of existence, then what do you do with those people that break the law? You have a prison. So what's the purpose of a prison? Detention. You keep them from harming other people and themselves. But it's not just detention. There's the other factor, and that's to rectify them. House of improvement. So they euphemistically call prisons a correctional center. And ideally that's what it's for, but I don't know how correctional their programs are. But that's the intention, to allow the persons, while they're in this confined situation, to become, again, inclined to be good citizens, so when they're released, they'll be good citizens. And if they're really good while in prison, they get special reprieve when they're released ahead of time. The governor, or the mayor, or the king, or somebody could grant amnesty to some prisoner. They have that power. And then they're set free with the idea that then now he's going to be a good citizen. So that's the correctional purpose. There's built within material experience is this ever-present reminder that it hurts. It's painful, and we don't like pain. We like pleasure. We like happiness. We don't like unhappiness. So again and again and again, there's unhappiness and there's pain. So people ask, why does God create a place where there's pain? It's to correct us from the mistake of trying to become the enjoyers, independent enjoyers of God's properties. Just stop being thieves, because you have to suffer. That's the message. I don't want to suffer. Let me find another program besides trying to be the enjoyer of somebody else's property, namely God's. Well, the problem is I forgot God, so it's like, how can it be his property? It's up for grabs. Let me grab it. Whoops. It's somebody else's property. Back in jail. So the higher principle, it's implied from the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, with the generations of men and demigods, I sent this process of sacrifice and blessed them, saying, by the sacrifice, may you be happy in this world, by yajna or sacrifice. So it's an opportunity. This world, this created realm, is an opportunity to improve our devotional service. So that's what we're undertaking, to improve our devotional service. But at least by good association, we're looking at the world as Krishna's property and trying to use it in Krishna's service, trying to improve our devotional service. That's the third of the options. Brahma wants his creation to be like that. Therefore, he wants the empowerment to present the teaching, how to do that. And here it is, the teaching how to do that. He's speaking a portion of Srimad Bhagavatam, and Vyasadeva recorded it. Lord Brahma is entrusted with the management of the complete cosmic show, and therefore he prays that the Lord bestows his blessings upon him so that he may execute its purpose. So first you have to know what its purpose is, what the svartha gatim, the real interest or purpose of existence. And then the intelligence and the empowerment and the ability, the capacity to carry that out. So this ends Brahma's prayers. I think I'll end there also. Tomorrow morning we'll continue. It's a break, so Maitreya is now speaking to Vidura, summarizing what's about to be explained, the Lord's response to Brahma's prayers, and then what Brahma did in his creation program. Any discussion? Yes?
You said that when we are in the material energy, then there is a risk. And then, but we also have this service, so I think you already mentioned that, but one of the struggles which I have in chanting is that, like, work, things go in mind, so it takes attention away from chanting. So, like, how can we make ourselves more strong or not think of those things when chanting?
Practice. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Constant practice and detachment. Then comes the, yeah, but I've got attachment. Well, cultivate real detachment is attachment to Krishna. You cultivate attachment to Krishna in a personal way and continue the practice. Practice of bring the mind to Krishna. That's that attention that brings mind and sense control and practice. And as that practice becomes habit, because by practicing, Prabhupada teaches that by practicing something, it becomes second nature. So the material nature is our conditioning. The material nature conditioning is the mind is restless. But by practice and practice, that becomes second nature. The mind just goes. You just give some indication and the mind goes. Or just goes. You don't even have to give indication. By practice and detachment or attachment to Krishna. And practice and practice and practice. Cultivate. Anushilanam, in the language of Nectar of Devotion. Cultivation. Prabhupada writes in the introduction to Nectar of Devotion, bhakti, or Krishna consciousness, is a type of cultivation. And the word cultivation is derived from the Sanskrit. Anushilana. Anu is following. Shilana, behavior, the behavior of perfected souls. We follow in the footsteps of perfected souls. We cultivate. We practice. It becomes second nature. It replaces the other one. It's like disciplining a child. If a child is bad, is behaving naughty, Prabhupada described this practice that he saw in school, that the teacher would tell the child, "You're naughty. Go sit in a corner and look at the wall." Great. How long can a restless child go and look in a corner and sit at the wall? Look at the wall. They'll be restless. You can tell the mind, just like, stop. But unless you give the mind some positive engagement, the mind isn't going to stop. It's continuing to be restless. So give the mind positive engagement. Think of Krishna. Different, so many ways of thinking of Krishna. You can list this, so many ways of thinking of Krishna. In practice, thinking of Krishna, the mind becomes satisfied, cleansed, and then satisfied. And when satisfied, it doesn't go somewhere else because it's satisfied. And in between, you know, being restless and being satisfied, there's practice. Anything else? Yes?
Like Maharaj, we see that there are many devotees who are really like uniquely empowered to do so many services. They serve the mission in such so many ways. So I was thinking, like, what internal quality those persons have to get that empowerment from the mission.
What internal qualities do they have? The main internal quality is sincerity, nectar devotion, eligibility for a candidate for devotional service. They want to be in their relationship with Krishna. They want to do some service for Krishna. Then comes the next question. Well, how do you get sincerity? Read your mind. And you know Prabhupada's answer is by being sincere. Everybody knows what sincerity is, so be sincere. We know what insincere is, and we know what sincere is, so we cultivate that. And again, from yesterday evening's presentation, how do you develop the quality of compassion? How do you develop the quality of sincerity? By associating with those that are sincere. And then you have the opportunity for that association. Open your heart to that person. Extend some trust to that person. Develop a close relationship with that person. And be eager to receive from that person. Not just information, but the quality of that person's sincerity. Just like if you're interacting with somebody, let's say you're interacting with your husband. Every now and then that happens, I guess. And something happens. I don't know. He forgets it's your birthday, or so, you know, he forgets to carry the garbage out, or you know, something happens, and it's like something happens. And you know his character is sincere. So if there's something, if there's some oversight or some negligence or something, you can easily overlook that because just consistently the person is sincere. Or vice versa. You may mess up something, and you know, the fabric of the relationship is respect based upon here's a very sincere individual. So as sincerity can invoke forgiveness of another person's shortcomings, between us and Krishna, the same thing. What we need to show Krishna is we sincerely not just want some, you know, on our report card, bhakti report card, get some gold stars for something. But we want the relationship with Krishna. That's just recognition by somebody that we can do something. Because sometimes that's, you know, a mix of the motivation of persons who are qualified to do something, because that was your question. They like doing something, and so they just practice at doing something, so they become good at doing something. And they also like the recognition, oh, you're good at something. And that's part of the perk that helps them stay practiced at that something. But in the long run, it's the sincerity to please Krishna. comes from association and the desire to have that quality. Even if we're not really clear what that quality is, there's the Gautarupa Goswami's teaching, and there's Adau Shraddha, some preliminary faith that they're the way that people, this is how I started, there must be some people that don't like the way that people treat each other in this world. There's got to be some other people like me that don't like that. I want to find those people. And there must be a place where they reside. I don't know where that place is, but I want to go there. That was like my ideal way of expressing. Like, part of it was frustration, but it was not just frustration. It was, there's got to be. I want that. I don't know what that is, but I want that. And that sincerity helped open the door for Krishna sending devotee association. When that devotee association came, it was yes. There were some moments of wait a minute, but it was yes. Sincerity, Krishna sends. And then it's beyond our capacity, it's empowerment. Anything else? Yes?
Maharaj, he mentioned about understanding the ultimate proprietorship, how Lord Brahma understands that the Lord is the ultimate proprietor.
Yeah.
In being the role of a mother, I understand that the Lord is he's a proprietor,
but
we have the tendency of in certain situations where I feel like, okay, now I have to take control. And at the same time, it's there in the
background. You just fell in Maya. You're the servant. I have to exercise my role as the servant. Then supposing it's the other way around. You're in the little baby, little small child's body, and you're looking at this, somebody that's big, and their message to you is verbal or nonverbal. I control you. Don't forget it. It doesn't feel good. I'm going to find a way to get away. I don't want that. But here is another. Here's this big person, I'm a little person, and they know that they're the servant of someone, and we're just in this chain of service here. And they're extending care and concern. And I was just listening to we were getting our luggage at the airport. Remember that situation? Where is he? Yeah. Okay. There was a father and his child, and on the luggage belt was a teddy bear, some kind of stuffed animal. And, he was encouraging the child to interact with that. It was his little stuffed animal. But when he started to lean over and be more playful and, get his hands at risk in the conveyor belt or that thing, he said, he spoke in a warm tone that said, oh, that's not going to be good. You or others might get hurt. Be very careful. So he needed to exercise control, but it was in a loving, and immediately the child was obedient. It wasn't, you know, because it was done in a loving way. There's a role, and the role is, the position is a servant, and the role is whatever it is. And then you have friends, and you have superiors, and you have, you know, so there's parallel, and there's up and down. In any case, you're a servant, you just have different roles of being a servant. And you can receive lovingly, and you can extend lovingly, and you can, you know, exchange lovingly. In all cases, is that Krishna should be pleased. That's like, that's the governing light over all of our activity. In the mood of service. Yeah, but... some circumstances, it gets so difficult, Maharaj, I don't know what to do. Is that where we were just going to go?
Yes, Maharaj. As the Yashoda Prabhupada mentioned, for kids from 8 to 13 is the discipline age.
Okay, but how do we discipline? How do we discipline? Don't just take that as a stick and start using it. How do we discipline? You want to hear a Prabhupada lesson? Jagadish Prabhu compiled a little thing on Gurukula. And from that you can understand, I can understand how to, not just with children but with people, how to discipline. Like, you know, a spiritual master has disciples. How do you discipline? Without discipline, what's the question of spiritual life? So, how do you discipline? So the teachers, this was in Dallas, interview with Srila Prabhupada, transcribed interaction. And lovingly. And Prabhupada, so they were saying, Srila Prabhupada, in school, sometimes the children behave really wildly, it's very difficult. Is it okay if we discipline? And his answer was no. No. And then, see? then they said, but Srila Prabhupada, some of the behaviors are disruptive of the classroom. In those circumstances, can we discipline? No. But Prabhupada, we can't have class. It's just like, it's mayhem in the classroom. No. So he just like, so many times it was no, 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 no. So they finally he said, you showed them love. Yeah, we try to show them love, but. And so then they accept it because Prabhupada was telling, they asked him, he's their spiritual master, and he said, no, show them love. So they went to that side, okay, we'll just show them love. Then, once they were on that side, and they understand where you're coming from, then you can discipline. Because obviously they weren't disciplining from that position of love. Previously it was controlling, not love. Then you can discipline. When the child understands that the place that you're coming from is love, then you can discipline. And then he was very explicit. He said, you can show a stick, but not use it. But not like, but you know, just show the stick, but not use it. I was at a home program somewhere, and I was using a projector, and there was like a power strip there, and it was the sound amplification from the, so it was the three things plugged in, the sound, the projector, and the computer. And a little boy came right next to it. He was curious about this little device here, and he wanted to like check it out. So he he slowly moved his hand towards the thing. He looked at his mother. And she went like this. Just like that. And he put his hand down. I thought, wow. Disciplined by love. She didn't have to say anything. She didn't have to do anything. She just went like this. He's controlled by love. Something that could hurt him, something that could hurt the equipment, something that's like, you know, dangerous. So obviously, before that act, there was a lot of love exchange between the mother and the child. So that just by her doing, because sometimes, wanting to get attention, children will misbehave just to get, because that's going to get them some attention. So let them get attention in other arenas. And then when it comes to discipline, it's okay. Because it's on the basis of love. That takes a lot. But that's part of parenting. Part of having a relationship. Don't have a relationship if you can't be in a relationship where you're extending love. And in order to extend love, you have to be able to receive it. And to give something, you have to have it. That's part of our devotional service to Krishna. Anything else? Yes. Look, we're giving you the microphone. Whoa. Go ahead.
So actually in Bhagavatam there is 9 forms of service. I forgot about that, so
yeah.
Can you please explain?
You want to hear what they are?
Yeah.
Prahlad Maharaj, in the 7th canto of the Bhagavatam, chapter 5, he lists them. And they begin with hearing and chanting, Shravanam Kirtanam. And actually that Shravanam Kirtanam is the support for the other 7. Because it all starts, everything, the awakening of, like when you're asleep, the first thing that happens is you hear your alarm works. Someone saying, wake up, some sound. Commonly that's what we do. So awakening of our spiritual consciousness is by sound, hearing. And then vibrating that sound, Shravanam Kirtanam. And then the other processes follow. From hearing, vibrating, comes remembrance. Not memorization, but awakening of our dormant spiritual consciousness. It awakens. Then remembrance of our natural state. That kind of remembrance. And then from that, other activities. Offering prayers. Deity worship. Archanam, bandhanam. Pada Sevanam, worshipping the lotus feet as the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. Dasyam, rendering service. Friendship, Sakyam. Atmanivedanam, full self-surrender. Those are the 9. But it starts with hearing and chanting. And it continues throughout. It's not like it starts and then you leave that one behind, you start doing the other ones. It's the essence and the foundation of the processes of devotional service. There's a very long, elaborate purport in the 7th canto, chapter 5, that describes in detail. Yes?
Thank you very much for that.
But as you said, when you are seeking where good relations are there, and you have the association of devotees, at the same time you're mentioning, wait a minute, what is this? You're facing some situations. So how do we tackle those situations in the association of devotees? You come across in situations which are not kind.
The the wait a minute that I mentioned was our own residual conditioning. Habits of valuing our so-called independence. Wishing to do what I like, when I like, how I like, however I like. And not wanting and seeing that restriction is confinement instead of restriction is upliftment. It's freedom. Restriction of the senses is freedom of life. Control of the mind and senses is freedom. But not reading it as freedom, seeing it as like, you know, something I'm uncomfortable with. That's the way that I meant. Oh, wait a minute. We value our freedom, especially Americans, like, you know, land of the free and the home of the brave, like, you know, we value our freedom. But it's a mistaken idea of freedom. There's a certain amount of, like, say, freedom of religion, freedom of the press, freedom of, you know, freedom. Certain inalienable rights. All men are created equal with certain inalienable rights. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Abe Lincoln. So, we are invested in that view. But that unbridled freedom is our demise. I'm free to go to hell. And better to not have that, you know, to check that those tendencies that drag us down into the lower modes of nature. So your question was specific to relationships. What Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur teaches is like the first stop on the subway car or the train or the, you know, your how you process something where you've got a little uh-oh experience in your interactions with others. Bhaktisiddhanta's advice is, look within. And to find, what is it within me that's causing this uh-oh experience, or is bringing this circumstance on my path of life? Is there something within me? Is there some tendency within me or some impurity within me that's making me feel uncomfortable? Because if I rather take a completely different situation, if Srila Prabhupada was in the same situation that I'm in, what would happen? He would elevate the circumstance just by his purity, by his presence. That's not what's happening here. I'm feeling, uh-oh. So the problem, I need to address something over here. That's first, like, you know, reflex. By spiritual training and practice, it becomes like that. Let me make my heart pure. What is it in this circumstance that's triggering me to feel me? It's like, you know, it's to make the heart pure. And then when the heart is pure, then I'm not doing, uh-oh, I'm understanding. Here's a situation of devotional service that Krishna is giving me an opportunity to render. What's the best way to serve Krishna in this circumstance? But if our thought doesn't go there, it goes to something that we're attached to. Something that needs attention within our own heart. And go there. Make the place clean. And then consider what service Krishna is providing you with, a service opportunity. Easier said than done, right? But that's the way of devotional life. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Actually, my question is related to the presentation yesterday.
Okay. That's perfectly okay.
So, you were speaking on compassion and...
It's not on. Is it on?
No, it's on separate. So, you were speaking about compassion, and to illustrate how compassion can be misapplied in different situations, you told us the story of King Bharat.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the beginning of the story, you explained how, you know, he's a very pious person and he's elevated greatly in his spiritual quality. So I was just curious how it came to be that, you know, even though he's been practicing so piously and he's very elevated, how is it that he, you know, it's so played out that through his compassion, it just turned out that it, like, his downfall.
It wasn't due to his compassion. Very specifically, it was due to a conscious misapplication of his free will. There's verses and verses where he rationalized the whole thing. Saving the baby deer was not wrong. It was right. That wasn't the problem. The problem was he became so absorbed in false ego of I'm the mother, I'm the father, I'm the dear most friend, I'm a this and I'm a that, and it would be wrong of me to neglect all that, and doing all of that, I'm neglecting my devotional practices and I'm neglecting the goal. But I can't neglect this because it would be irreligious of me, and therefore he consciously chose negligence of spirit and absorption in the false ego of his role as a protector of the baby deer. He lost the spiritual platform by conscious choice. That's misapplication of compassion.
And so, like, even in our life, when we're faced with making these decisions, we have to realize which one is beneficial for our spiritual life.
Yes. Yeah. In life, there are many times when circumstances are beyond our control. And when that happens, it's beyond your control. There's a free will choice you can make of how you're going to address yourself to that circumstance. I'm thinking specifically of, because I've been, another seminar is stress management, where I make reference to Viktor Frankl's book, Certain Man's Search for Meaning, where he's a Jewish physician in a Nazi concentration camp. It's an external circumstance, it's beyond his control, and he writes, man should not strive by all means to free himself from circumstances that are outside of his control. Supernatural forces that you just can't do anything about. Like getting old or getting diseased or some calamity or something or something or something. I mean, so, this, you know, take your circumstance. It looks like you're going to take a first step career where you may not have wholesome, robust association like you have here. Maybe that's what's going to happen. Now, in that circumstance, how are you going to exercise your free will? You can whine and complain, or you could think, here's an opportunity, unlike the one I've just been in, here's an opportunity where I can, you know, fill in the blank. Become more prayerful. I can become feeling more dependent. I can think of Srila Prabhupada coming to New York City and having no resource. And of course, you know, he was Prabhupada, but I'm not coming to New York City with no resource. I've got so many resources. But and thinking, I can think more deeply about the surrender of Srila Prabhupada. You can use the circumstance where you're exercising your free will in a very clearly devotional capacity, and in that circumstance develop your Krishna consciousness like you might not in a different circumstance. Because if there are circumstances, that's how you exercise your free will, to nurture your Krishna consciousness, not like abandon my spiritual life, I can't do that because I won't have the association they've had. If that's the circumstance, then how to stay fixed in the right spiritual consciousness and grow it with the whatever the external thing is. And what else do I need to do to keep myself plugged in, connected, and then think of Prabhupada and manifest Krishna consciousness here for a while and feel prayerful and empowerment from that prayerfulness and protected. And you know, maybe there's a special soul that Krishna has there and he wants some, you know, I've some mission. There must be some purpose for Krishna. Let me see what that, I don't know exactly, but let me see what that is and what I can do and be his instrument and stay in that consciousness, and your the soul well-being is looked after. And taking whatever other circumstance may be there for somebody. Okay. We're done. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.